Welcome to The Humble Hustle, the only podcast for inspiration and motivation with real-world examples of failures that redefine success for men and women who understand that hustling happens every single day. Welcome to Humble Hustle. I'm Jackie.
I'm Nicole.
I'm Vivian.
Hey, so today, ladies, what are we going to talk about? Lots going on in the industry, a lot of fake hustle. A lot of fake hustle. People are getting caught up in the idea of entrepreneurship and success. So we're just going to chat about what some stories about what's going on in the world, and then, you know, how to maintain your integrity across being able to grow and growing fast, and what that looks like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And growing for real versus likes and clicks. And
right.
All the exciting but less, you know, sexy parts of the business.
Yeah. So earlier you guys were talking about Theranos. What do we think about Theranos?
Well, I watched the documentary yesterday and it was quite interesting. We were just talking about the psychosis that kicks in when people feel like they have to continue on trying to produce a product even though they know everything is going the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they don't want to deny
admit
the
failure.
Investors, the, you know, the money right. that they're getting in, and, you know, it just brings about the crazy in a lot of people. And mm-hmm. then the other part of it is the hurt and the harm that comes to the communities that, you know, this is impacting, because Arizona was the arena where she launched the health centers or yep. wellness centers or mm-hmm. whatever with yep. Walgreens. And, you know, people were, you know, traumatized behind all of that.
Yeah. Well, and I think it left a bad taste and really a bad name. I mean, she was a woman in tech and yes. one of the first billionaire women right. self-made in tech. Mm-hmm. And so as women, as hustlers, as entrepreneurs, you feel like, you know, now we're all kind of subject to, well, is this another Elizabeth Holmes?
Right.
And, you
right.
know, and that's unfortunate to have kind of that one bad egg in a, you know, a yeah. sea of women who are working so hard in tech to get, you know, to be legitimized mm-hmm. and funded respected, and yeah. respected in the things that they're doing.
Yeah. And then we also have to be careful about, you know, putting a dollar value on a business, because with that documentary, they said that they never made, you know, revenue over maybe a couple hundred thousand. So maybe billions in investments, you know, and prototype development or whatever, and all those resources came from other places, but the business never ever generated, you know, revenue on that particular level.
No, and I think people also think it's just these big behemoth kind of companies and fire festivals, another mm-hmm, one where yeah. tons of money came in, but there is it. Truthfully, entrepreneurs at any size can fall prey to this. It's so easy when you are working so hard to get something started to just say, I'm just going to cut corners this time. Mm-hmm. I'm just mm-hmm. going to buy clicks this time. I'm right. just going to buy likes. I'm just going to pay extra to boost this post and start cutting corners instead of really considering that your integrity, you know, who you are, is going to carry through. No matter if this business fails, that's no big deal.
Right.
But when your integrity fails, that's going to come with you. Elizabeth Holmes, should she not be in jail for the rest of her life, is never going to get hired by anyone ever
yeah.
again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that she would have been better off walking away and letting that business fail.
Right.
Than allowing her integrity to take that hit, because
right.
now she's done. It's not mm-hmm. just that
yeah,
Theranos is done.
She brought a lot of people into, you know, the trenches with her with that, because, you know, there were public officials, there were, you know, big business people, and they had all of the confidence in her to make this a success. But, you know, the one thing that really kind of got to me was she was trying to clone herself after Steve Jobs from another
yeah.
industry. So just that whole concept of the thinking at that level,
mm-hmm.
opposed to saying that I'm going to use his model
right.
to try to, you know, mm-hmm. build my practice after that. It was like, you know, why didn't people see that there was something wrong there?
Right. And that's interesting, because if you look at, and I'm a huge fan of Steve Jobs, but he was a very mercurial human being
mm-hmm.
who eventually was fired from his own company.
Right.
Like, what are you modeling exactly? Right. Like, mm-hmm. that's, to me, he created an incredible company that is an outlier because he was an outlier.
Right. Yes.
Like, you cannot repeat those. Mm-hmm. You're never going to repeat Facebook. You aren't going to repeat Amazon.
Yeah.
Like, to use them as, like, those
guiding
lights.
But you shouldn't try to either. That's what's weird about
right.
it.
Right. Just, like, go be you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, to be the Apple of blood testing, I don't think was, you know.
Right.
It doesn't even sound sexy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and even I struggle with, you know, looking at Elizabeth Holmes and then with the Fyre Festival and the way that came out, I immediately took it, you know, a little personal because I'm like, we're the same age. And then I look at, is Brandon, what's his name from Fyre Festival?
Oh, God.
Yeah, he was in his 30s.
He's in his 30s. Well, I blank his name.
So Billy, you know, Billy. And, you know, we're in our 30s. Is this, I know, you know, these types of things happen all the time, but for me, and I think most of my generation, we took it really personal of like, is this the bad part about being in this generation? Because we always talk about how, you know, we're not necessarily millennials because we still respect like industry, old age, tradition, what that looks like. But we also grew up with technology, so we know how to manipulate it better than those that came after us.
Right.
I don't think that the young folks in their 30s really and truly recognize the power in the historical walk of this business endeavor.
Right.
I think that you want to take what you want to take from it mm-hmm. and utilize those people as resources for financial reasons and then also popularity, right?
Right.
Because when you look at the caliber of people that she had sitting or around the table mm-hmm. that she came in contact with, it was really and truly to put that face with hers to carry some longevity of this whole process. I don't think that, you know, they knew enough about this technological invention
right.
to be able to say it, but it sound really, really good.
Well, that's
good,
what I'm saying. Yeah,
right?
That's what I'm saying. So is that like the flaw for my generation that because we know who to position ourselves with because we saw it,
yes.
you know, we understand it, we respect it. We were forced to read the books and read the encyclopedia. So we know, you know, that like what real wealth looks like, how to actually make that conversation happen for
right.
us. But then we also understand the importance of likes and comments.
Yes.
Right.
You know, and so to me, it was like really depressing almost because it was just watching it. It was like, is this going to be the downfall of my generation? Because we're not technically, you know, we're not millennials. We know a little bit more, but we're also, like, at a fault because we understand how to manipulate both sides.
Yeah,
right?
And where do you go back and do the level set,
right?
It's right. like, okay, I got to go back and rethink this or recalibrate because once you hit an issue,
mm-hmm.
you know, do I go back and get the experts to bring me, you know, to some realization to say, stop right here, let us help you before you fall flat on your face.
Yeah.
And I think that she had so many opportunities to do that with the seasoned biochemists
mm-hmm.
and, you know, folks that she was working with. But she began to push them out of the way to get the least, you know, less experienced
yeah.
folks because she knew she could make them say yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's what worries me.
To me, that's
about
a lot
it.
Of ego, and I don't
yeah.
know that that's a millennial thing. I think it's just, I think it's a young thing to
mm-hmm.
have that kind of ego. And I think to be raised in a time period, I mean, as a child growing up, when you talk about billion-dollar companies, you were talking about General Motors and
right.
Ford and like these Armstrong World
mm-hmm.
Industries, 100-year-old companies who grew to that really weren't owned by a person. A lot of them are publicly held or they're owned by generational families.
Mm-hmm.
It's really come into this time period. People in their 30s are growing up. The idea that individuals, Bill Gates, Mark
mm-hmm.
Zuckerberg, Paul Allen, that people could be billionaires in their own right.
Right.
That the idea of those numbers was not absurd.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that it didn't take 100 years of growth to get there.
Right.
Yes.
And I think that's the dangerous place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And technology has played a significant role in that, but it still took some time for them to get there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, I don't ever remember hearing a lot of deceptive practices.
Right.
One of the psychologists on that show said that people in tech are the biggest liars about what the outcomes of what the product can do. You know, what is it going to solve? You know, how is it going to make the world better? And usually they use something in that vein in order to sell the product.
Yeah.
And when it flops, it's like, oh my God, you know. But it was, I applaud her for her efforts. You know, just seeing a female, you know, take something on like that. You know, I was thinking like to myself, oh, I don't never have to go to the doctor again, and I can go to a little clinic and they can tell me all this stuff and teach me how to read my blood work. But then when you saw all of the fails in it, it made me think about all of the fails and some of the other innovations that have come about because there wasn't enough testing and the government didn't get involved with, you know, regulating any of it. So, yeah.
I don't know. Makes me nervous.
Yeah.
It's another level of deception to me. That's weird.
Well, and I think it's a level of it's a level of psychosis is what that really is. Because really, I don't see them as entrepreneurs. These are people who have really mastered the confidence game. Like to me, these are people who
confidence or manipulation.
I think they're con men. Women.
Oh,
but okay. I mean the true confidence game. I don't mean confidence like self confidence. I mean.
Yes.
I mean the game of being a con. Like, I just think that they are the next level, this generation's version of what has always existed. There's always been con men and women. But I think this is this generation. And because of social media, because of the tech industry, I think that they will become more infamous than a lot of cons have in the past. I don't think most of us can name a lot of really famous cons. Unless you've seen some sort of like Lifetime, you know, documentary on them. But I think the social media has helped. I think because they were in tech and there is so much interest in venture capital where they could get these huge numbers of money
really
based
fast.
On nothing but a promise and a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, Henry Ford couldn't get that kind of money.
Yeah.
You know, even if we
talked about Thomas Edison and, you know, all of the things and trials and tribulations that he went through.
Right.
You know, just trying to patent some of the electrical things. And the electric car was one of the concepts that he had in his, you know, cadre of adventures way back then.
Oh, right. Hell, Leonardo da Vinci had drawn up a flying machine long before helicopters ever touched down.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that they are cautionary tales, you know, of, unfortunately, I think for people who really do have businesses that are legitimate and have scientific backing and can really work, now investors are going to be like, do I want to give them $500 million? Are you just another, my concern is going to be, are you just another Billy McFarland? Are you just another Elizabeth Holmes? And then how does that squelch great innovation because we've had these. I don't really consider them legit, especially Billy McFarland, who has a history. Because before him, it was that credit card.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, he is a con, and so I don't see them as entrepreneurs. But my fear is that it puts a black mark on entrepreneurship, especially high level entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a lesson to the little hustlers, like. Your integrity is everything.
Yeah.
If you're like, well, I didn't hustle someone out of 500 million. If you're lying about your clicks and you're lying about who's attending, how many people attend your events, and if you're sold out or not, or how much things cost, you eventually will be found out.
Right.
And then I would rather see my business fail or just admit that I'm a smaller business than allow my integrity to fail because if this thing doesn't work out, where am I getting a job?
Right.
Because once you ruin your integrity, that there's no coming back from that. Especially in a day with social media where news travels like faster than you can. Why would you risk it?
I mean, even in looking, you know, you talked about like the clicks and likes and looking at how people buy followers is crazy. You know, I look at, you know, our following versus other people and I'm like, there's no way you have this many people. Like, it's just, I've listened to the content or I've watched or read something and I'm like, you can't tell me people are eating this up. So it's just interesting to see, you know, the way that things are manipulated now and what that looks like. And that, to me, that's why it's depressing, because it kind of gives, for someone like me that, you know, deals with imposter syndrome and feeling like I'm not supposed to be in the room, even though I do deserve to be in the room. And then you have the person you're sitting across from, they definitely don't deserve to be there, but it like puts a strap on your throat because you're nervous to speak up. Right. Meanwhile, the person across from you is just lying the entire time.
Right. Yeah. And that's, like, you can see someone has like 500,000 likes, but every time they post something, if the engagement is 1,000 on 500,000, that's telling me that those aren't real engagements. Mm-hmm. That those aren't real followers. I would rather follow someone who has 1,000 followers, and every time they post something, 500 to 750 are engaging with them. Tells me those are legitimate people who are listening to you and believe in the work that you're doing over the same person who's getting the same number and has 50 times more people. People forget to look at that.
Yeah, I click on famous people's stuff just for fun. Like, you have how many likes? Like, and if it's not 10% of what they're following is, I'm like, oh, these people are fake. Like, you can't possibly, you can't tell me you have the same following as Beyonce and not get the same engagement. Like, it just doesn't work. And you're a normal person, right? You're just an Instagram influencer or a model. And I'm like, yeah, that's not right. And I'm like, wait till this new algorithm comes out. When is Instagram going to catch you guys? Like, half of their followers disappear and what this looks like.
Right. And look at their real business. Go to an event. Like, that's the other thing is people will look on social media, but you can self-create content. Mm-hmm. So go out. How often have they been in a magazine or a newspaper or an interview or someone else's podcast? How often are they doing live events? Are you attending those live events? Where are those live events? What's the attendance look like? Who are their guests? Because you can produce a tremendous amount of content on your own, and it means nothing. So it's who
watched Billy do it.
Yeah, right? It's about who's creating content about you.
Right.
So, like, if you go and you Google them and the only thing that comes up is self-published stuff, that should tell you a lot.
Exactly.
But then you have the flip side of that, right? Because with Elizabeth, there was no internet presence. Mm-hmm. It was all printed material and, you know, the news or whatever. Mm-hmm. She did a TED Talk.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm
like, that should be another hint. Like, if I can't get your information, you can't tell me your story, and you can't tell me your science, you know, don't tell me it's a secret. If it's patented, I can't, I can't repeat what you're doing.
Yes.
I mean, when I go to like Apple's website to look about the technology behind my iPhone, it's all there for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Apple fears not, you know? And they have everything to lose if someone steals their technology.
Yeah.
So if people like Apple can put it out there in the public space so you know what it is, so should they.
Right. But that takes experience, right? And it, you know, so once you've been in this, you know, arena for a while, then you become more confident.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you talk about integrity. You know, it's the community that I'm serving or trying to sell this product or service to. It's their right to know this information.
Right.
But when you don't have that level of experience and it becomes all about you promoting, you know, I did this. I'm doing this. You know, you lose, tremendously. And so I think that that is where that divide came about. Our previous guest talked about that. He said, you can't, you know, win without a team.
Right.
Right.
And so you have to have a team around you, and your team has to hold you accountable to make sure that, you know, you're not, you know, miscommunicating, misinforming, and misusing resources that people who are trying to invest in you, know, are, because they want to see you become successful.
And you have to be comfortable in having a team that you respect, that will call you out. Because as we just discussed with Elizabeth Holmes, what she started doing was just removing the most high-level people so that the people left in the room who are very dependent on their paycheck were also kind of yes men. That we're just going to say whatever she wanted because they needed this job.
Right.
Versus people who are really going to tell you the truth about the things you're doing.
Yes.
And you have respect for them and saying, that's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, but that takes a lot of humility to be able to be comfortable with what you don't know and then hear it from somebody else. Because I'm sure she's like, well, I'm the CEO. I hold the patents. I'm the creator. And it's really easy to say I'm the smartest person in the room. As a business person,
the best CEOs are not the smartest people in the room.
Yeah. That's the first lesson. Is if you are the smart, you should never be the smartest person.
You never want to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah, if you are, you're in trouble. And I think it was Harvard did a really interesting study is when they asked students to break up into like group projects, what they found was that A students would seek out other A students mm-hmm. to be on their team.
Yeah.
But B and C students would only find students that were beneath them.
Yeah.
And that fear that someone would know more, that someone mm-hmm. would want to, if you were assigned to be the team leader and you were a B or a C student, you wouldn't go find the A's because you didn't want someone removing you from your role.
Mm.
That was more important than finding the best people.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought that was really interesting. And you watch it in organizations and you can see
that. But we mm-hmm. teach that kind of unhealthy competition, you know, in schools today.
Right.
Mm. You know, we don't look at the fact that, you know, because this student is a B student, it may be because of the way that the information is being presented.
Right.
So I think that that's a really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and we also suggest that the only way to get to the top is to be the A student.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is when I look at some of the best business people in the world, some of them never finished college.
Right. Right. Or let alone high school.
Right. Right. Some of them will tell you they weren't great students when they were there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes more than just book smarts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of street smarts involved. And the reality is that you may have just been a different learner and you just didn't have a great educational experience. That doesn't make you not a great leader, which is total, because I know a lot of like A people who are not great leaders.
Right.
Like we've all seen it. We've seen CEOs who have brilliant ideas are horrible at leadership.
Right.
And we've seen great leaders who never graduated from high school or college. But one has nothing to do with the other. So to constantly teach the B or C student that the only way you're ever going to be in a position of leadership is to be an A is part of the problem.
Right.
If we told the B student, all you have to do is surround yourself with greatness, you know, that's a different discussion. And we never say that.
Yeah. I talk to Jackie about that all the time, about the way people learn. And when we're developing resources and talking, it was like nobody in the room. You know, or she'll say to me, nobody in the room grasps that information. And I think it's just really important to also understand that, you know, as an entrepreneur, that you have to understand how you learn and what your capacity is.
Right.
Because if you don't, you know, you feel like you, oh, I know a little bit about this and a little bit, but you only know enough to get you so far.
Right.
So you have to start bringing in the experts. And that's where the conversation begins. Like these people have to be smarter than you.
Right.
That's in order for you to move your business
and that you
forward.
Don't have to know it all. Like I understand that I can glean the basics from a P&L statement.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever ask me to create one. I am smart enough to know I can read it. I can't create it and to hire someone to do that.
Yeah,
I want to make sure that the person I hire knows how to do it really well. I just want to make sure I know how to read it.
Yeah.
You need to know that you can't be all the roles.
Mm-hmm.
So like find your lane, be really good out of it, stay out of the other lanes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and let them be in their lanes.
Yeah.
And again, that's part of integrity. Part of integrity, I think, is really humility.
Yeah.
Like, you start wandering from your integrity when you're like, well, I've got to know everything. And that's where you cut corners, you make mistakes. Sometimes you've done it on purpose. You've made a choice that you knew was not good. Sometimes you do it on a mistake because you just didn't know better.
Yeah.
But your integrity suffers when, like, your ego takes
over. Do you think that people suffer from that because they don't know how to ask for help?
Yes, that's what I was getting ready to say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to teach first of all, you know, and we love to talk about failure here. And I think the more that we talk about fail, because we love to talk about winning. Like, you know, winning's everything.
Well, let's not
hashtag
say,
winning.
I guess failure and lessons. Because I think out of the, you know, the supposed failures come a lot of lessons.
I do.
A lot of times people don't want to adhere to the lesson in order to grow.
But I think they don't want to adhere to the lesson because we frame it as failure. And I think if we take the stigma away from it's like mental health. Like if we just take the stigma away from it, I think people get so much more comfortable talking about it. If we walk away from the stigma of failure rather than it's just experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where everything comes from. I mean, as little kids, you fell off a bike a million times before you learned
trying,
to ride it.
Right?
And you didn't care about that. You were just so excited when you finally learned how to ride a bike. But as adults, we won't do things that we can't immediately pick up. Like, how many times have we just, I'm not going to play golf. I'm not any good at it.
Yeah.
How many times did you practice before you decided to do it?
I'm still not roller skating because I'm not good at it, though.
Right. Like, there's you know what? I feared downhill skiing forever and then discovered at 45 that I love downhill skiing. And I thought, oh my God, I've spent 2.5 decades not downhill. Like I've lost 25 years of downhill skiing. because I was sure I wasn't going to be good at it. And I don't know why, because I love speed. Mm-hmm. And I used to figure skate, which is all on edges.
Right.
Skiing is all on edges. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't believe I talked myself out of 25 years of downhill skiing to find out at 45 with bad knees and a bad back that now I love downhill skiing. I'm like, what a waste. Because I was so, it was my ego over everything else. I feared the Wile E. Coyote tumble down the mountain and become a giant snowball at the bottom, as if that actually happens.
Right.
I fear that, like the falling down,
yeah.
Which as a kid, you've fallen down a million times and just wasn't okay with it. I'm like, get over yourself.
Yeah. And but I wonder whether, I mean, I think it's odd because I can remember being in a classroom as a kid and I'm the first person to say, I don't understand. Right. I don't understand. I need help. So where does that come from? And I think I'll even do it now. Like, I know this is what you want me to do, but I really don't understand it.
Right.
And, you know, even my mom will get frustrated with me because I'm like, I really don't understand. And she'll explain it five times. And I'm like, this, I have to pinpoint, this is the part that I'm not grasping.
But the other thing is, she doesn't really learn a whole lot by you speaking it to her. You got to put it on paper.
Yep.
If you want her to capture it. And I said, well, you wanted to do this in a way that I don't think you're amenable and open to learning it this way. Right. But let's go through the process, right? And I want you to come out and say, you know what? Yeah,
I got it.
I don't want to learn it that way.
And I think you may have gone through, I think for a lot of people, those who are afraid to ask went through an experience where someone humiliated them over it.
Absolutely.
And I like how many times it take being humiliated that you're done.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that that's what it is for a lot of people, is the idea of that they were humiliated. They fell off the stage at a dance recital. Mm-hmm. They, you know, fell on the ice during an ice, you know, skate. Whatever it was that created humiliation, and that was the moment when they were like, well, I'm just going to, or someone laughed at them for asking what everyone else totally understood in class, and students laughed, or the teacher laughed, or someone's like, how could you, or a parent was like, how could you be so stupid?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that perhaps you were fortunate enough just to have you had an environment that praised questions.
Yeah.
No. So no.
Sometimes.
No.
But you know what?
You're secure enough in yourself that you're like, fuck it, I'd rather learn.
We did encourage it, but you know, Jackie's going to ask you 20. And it was like, okay, enough. But you know what? Oftentimes it is passed down, because I can remember, I teach math at the community college, all levels, and students will come in, the first thing they say, I hate math, I've never been good at it, you know, whatever.
I just want you to know, as you said, I teach math, first thing in my head.
I hate math. Right. So I think about, like, who put that into your being? And generally it's a parent saying, I was never good at math, so tell your teacher don't send math home, and I don't know how to teach you how to do it, blah, 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 blah. So I have to go all the way back to let's talk about how we can learn this. I have to sing a song with them to teach them the order of operations, so that that concept is instilled in their brain, so that when we're processing, okay, what's the problem? What is the order of operations? They sing it to themselves, and then they can respond to the question.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's where it happens. And when we were talking about young entrepreneurs, you know, we have to start instilling that type of confidence and insight and vision at a very, very early age.
Right.
Because there are so many people that are going to slap them and knock them down or whatever, because they're going to say no, or you did it wrong.
Right.
And I hate seeing that.
Yeah.
You know, I hate seeing it every single day.
And I think as someone who's a parent now, and my kids are 17 and 23, what I see is us coddling children. Mm-hmm. You know, we would not let our kids. One of the first things I asked when we would sign up for sports, you know, are you a participation league? And I'm like, oh, yes, we give a trophy to everyone. Never mind.
Yeah.
Awards are for winners. I'm sorry, but life is full of winning and losing, of getting the job and not getting the job. And if you teach my kid that just showing up is enough, they're never going to learn, and they become fragile. The first job they don't get, they're destroyed. I'm never going to get a job. All right, if they don't learn grit and determination at a young age, because that's what we really need to teach, are just these basic things. It's great that we're teaching math. You've got to teach people to learn how to survive.
Yeah.
And that they need
application is the key.
You're going to have to keep doing stuff to get better at it. Yeah. And that is going to be your lifetime. So, like, mm-hmm. please stop giving everybody trophies and helicopter parenting. Because you're not doing them any favors as adults. They don't understand integrity. They don't understand having to really put in the hours to do something. Like, I think you see a lot of these 20-year-olds getting their first job out of college, and they're like, they want me to work all day. They want me to take stuff home with me. And it's like, because schools now aren't assigning homework, the idea of having to commit to something more than just the hours you're there is anathema. And I'm like, mm-hmm. we are not doing anyone any favors in this, because life is hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just because we have technology and we're not in, like, wagons, you know, getting across America, doesn't mean that the world suddenly got easier.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we've given this illusion that technology makes things easy. And so everyone wants that instant gratification, whether it's losing weight or getting a job or making $1 million. And because it doesn't happen, then that's where things like we have fragile egos and people who are willing to cut corners to make things happen because all they can
see or lie. We're talking about integrity or lie, right? If you don't like it, just say that you don't like it. I can remember when they were children, it was like, I'm giving you the experience for you to help me to make a decision about what I really needed to focus on relative to your growth. But if you don't like it, you know, Jackie did everything, piano and instruments and dance and
how
whatever,
much of it did you
know,
do well?
And sports and, you know, and you know what? Everything was about a book. You know, she would, when she had to sit on the sideline, she had a book open. And I said, only my child, only my child.
To this day, like, people like.
Because I felt like I was being made to play sports.
Yeah.
You want to try gymnastics? Sure. I did some cartwheels for a little while.
But how do you find your passion and your purpose if you don't try all of this stuff?
Yeah.
Like, people laugh. Like, in gym class, I go to the gym. I go to Equinox, like, 8 or 10 classes a week. I am always right next to the instructor in the front row. I suck in a ton of these classes. I have to modify. I have to stop every once in a while, catch my breath. I don't stand in the front row because I'm the best. I want the experience. And the truth is, I've gotten over myself.
Yeah.
I want to be there just as bad as you. Yeah. I'm not a size 2. I realize that you are looking at my rolls of my fat, the next 3 rows behind me, but that's fine. Yes. But it's just about getting comfortable with myself and acknowledging it's okay to suck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how you get to that point. I mean, I've been clumsy my whole life. So
I just own it.
That's what I was going to say. When you hit your mid-40s and on up, you just start to own and
accept
all of those things.
I'm not going to learn anything new. This just is what it is. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to. This is how I started learning to ski at 45. I'm like, what else am I giving up on? I need to do these things before I can't.
Right.
So I might as well figure out,
right,
you know, as many of them as possible.
It's so funny. Yeah. My friends are like, you are so clumsy and you just don't seem to care. I'm like, if I don't fall once a month, something's wrong. Yeah. And I'm nervous. Like, I literally get a little anxious about it. Like,
listen, I still buy Band-Aids in a house for my adult children because they're always tripping on something.
Tripping or cutting myself or doing something weird. I got these 2 scratches on my, I don't know where they came from. And I'm just like, they're there. I don't know.
Yeah, because we need to live life and not wrap ourselves in bubble wrap.
Right. And I'm just like, these are things that are happening, and I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, in my 40s, I strove to do these one and onlys, right? Like, I competed in a fitness competition. What else did I do? I rode a train to someplace by myself. You know, it was like all of these. I'm going to go to the movies by myself. I'm going to do all of these things that, you know, I thought I couldn't do without someone else, without the company or support of someone else.
Right.
And I think going through my 40s and doing all of those things helped me to build me into the person that I am now. Because it's not a whole lot of shit that phases me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But you have to get
all of my emotions about little shit, you know, unless it's like kids. You know, that's about the only time that I ever really tear up.
Yeah.
Just goes. It's just like, okay, shit, that's in one ear and out the other because, I can't do anything about it. I can listen.
But you're 55 now. You're in a different place.
You have to figure out, how you're going to manifest the change and come to terms with whatever that issue is and be beholden to yourself, right?
And maybe that's another discussion we have because we're out of time today. Yeah. But maybe the next discussion would be like, maybe one shouldn't start as an entrepreneur in their 20s. And maybe there's some life lessons that they need to get out of the world before they step into that place. And that's maybe something else we should talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly believe that the only reason I've been able to maintain being an entrepreneur for so long, number one, because of my family. Number two, because I worked in operations for so long.
In a corporate mm-hmm. setting.
In a corporate setting. And so I understood the expectations for a client because I understood the expectations from my boss. So understanding what someone should receive and what their experience should be like has always just been so important to me.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't think anybody should be an entrepreneur at 20.
Yeah.
You got to do some kind of work. You have to work in some type of capacity where someone has an expectation for you that's higher than you would set for yourself.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think there should be
that was a great statement. Say that again. Someone has a higher expectation for you than you have for yourself.
Yeah. Because otherwise you don't have anything to aspire to or to reach to, and you think the bare minimum is good enough.
Right.
I mean, I look at, you know, my first internship. He gave me a list. I did the stuff on the list. I thought I was done. And he was like, well, where are the other parts? Where's the part that you did in between this? Or where's the next step? And I was like, I don't know what the next step is. And he was like, well, sit down and think about it. No one pushes you to do that at 20.
Right.
You know? So how would you know what the next step is going to be for a client?
Right.
You don't. You just think, yeah, I made this thing right here, and this is all you should get. You should be happy you got it. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Interesting. All right, ladies.
That is all for today, but we will talk about that next time.
Thank you.
Wonderful
Thank
you conversation, as always.
All right.
Talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. If you like what you've heard, please rate, review, share, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you use to listen. We should definitely hang out more. And you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at thehumblehustle.co and on our website at www.thehumblehustle.co. Have questions, need advice, have an idea? Drop us a line at hello@thehumblehustle.co. We are proudly recorded in the studios of Motor City Woman. All production and editing is by Robin Kinney.